Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
An insanely busy day continues from Sportsnet today into The Big Show with Pat, Will, Logo, and Riley for the next 2 hours. 4 o'clock Flames warm-up. 5 o'clock Flames New Jersey Devils. This is the first of 14 back-to-back sets for the Calgary Flames this season, the highest number I can ever remember. Live from the Iconic Studio today, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Instrumentation, it's iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. Flames up to 3-1-1 on the year, thanks to a 5-1 win at Madison Square Garden last night. Tonight, it's the Devils. Calgary looking for win 4 in a row. Let's look back to kick it all off with yesterday's game in a minute.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, with winter tire swaps from just $59.95. Book your appointment today at Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Live from Madison Square Garden in New York City, Calgary Flames hockey is on the air. Tonight, Johnny Gaudreau and the 2-1-1 Calgary Flames, and improved to a perfect 3-0 to start a five-game road trip by beating Artemi Panarin and the 4-1-1 New York Rangers. Backhands the pocket of the corner, Lucic, centers, Monahan, robbed by Shesterkin. And then Lewis is stopped by the Rangers goaltender, who makes his two best saves of the game.
He's been great, and he's been great all season to open this campaign.
Slides it ahead to Lindholm. Lindholm gives it to Gaudreau, who centers it. Tanev shoots and scores! Chris Tanev scores his first goal in 30 games and gives the Flames a 1-0 lead. Mangiapane shoots and scores! And he wires one right into the top corner to make it 2-0 Flames. Lucic turns the puck over, and now we've potentially got an odd man rush. Mika Zibanejad cuts into the middle, loses it, finds it, shoots it, and Jacob Markstrom makes his trickiest save tonight. Here's Trouba with a shot, stop, rebound, they score! And the Rangers finally put one past Jacob Markstrom on their 24th shot. They make it 2-1. Here's Pintlick centering, Coleman shoots! Shesterkin the save, Coleman shoots and scores! Blake Coleman picks up his own rebound and buries it. And the Flames have another 2-goal lead. It is 3-1. Here's Coleman to Backlund. He stick handles and shoots and scores! What a shot by Michael Backlund, who fires the puck into the top corner of the Rangers' net. His first goal or point this season makes it 4-1 Flames. Here's Mangiapane with a shot. He scores! A perfectly executed face-off play for the Flames, and Andrew Mangiapane's got his second goal of the game. He makes it 5-1 Flames. And there is the horn signaling the end of this hockey game at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Andrew Mangiapane tallies twice and gets the game-winning goal as the Flames improve to a perfect 3-0 to start their five-game road trip. They defeat the Rangers 5-1.
Game in a Minute brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Drive home an executive-driven demo starting at just $242 bi-weekly. From Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
All right, well, it's been a pretty solid start to this road trip for the Flames. That's three games in a row where I think, by and large, you like what you saw. At least I have. They've been the better team, I think, for a good chunk of all three of these games. And I really like the way this group has responded when things have not gone perfectly. Like, I look to the Washington game after being up 3-0, Capitals push, tie it. Flames didn't panic, found a way to get it to overtime and won. Last night, Rangers finally break through. Madison Square Garden's hot, building's good, and less than 3 minutes later, Coleman scores to make it 3-1 again. I really like the way the Flames have played on this trip and the way they've responded when things haven't necessarily gone their way.
By the way, just because I had some time there, I quickly looked it up. The last Olympic year for the NHL was 13-14. The Flames had 12 back-to-backs that year. So,
So 14
Olympic years that get them.
14 really is high then.
Yeah.
That's just not my perception.
Because 12 is still quite a bit, but 12 is what the Flames had in the 13-14 season. They have 14 this year. And as you mentioned, tonight will be the first of those 14 this season. And I agree with everything you just said about the road trip. I put it on Twitter last night, still two games to go, including tonight. And so I think even if these next two games don't go very well, it's been a very positive road trip for the Calgary Flames. It's been a lot of things that you know, think that it can carry over. We always look for identity and for how this team plays in terms of the system under Daryl Sutter. They have done almost everything perfectly. They haven't given up a ton. I'm with you. I think in all three games, has there been moments for the opposition? Sure. Of course there has been. But I think they have been the better team in those three games. And through five so far this season, pretty impressed with what I've seen so far with this Flames team. Now, of course, there's 77 to go, so lots of hockey left. But it's been a very good start for this team. And I thought last night Blake Coleman had his best game as a Calgary Flame.
And that line had their best game. And that was maybe the most encouraging thing for me coming out of that game, is that Backlund was really good. Coleman, I'm with you, had his best game as a Flame. And I think Tyler Pitlick is starting to come along. And we talked yesterday about how there's kind of this weird gap and too large a gap between the Lindholm line and the rest of the three lines. Well, last night they didn't need to rely on the Lindholm line being the driver. In fact, I didn't think that line was all that great based on what we have seen in recent games, and that's okay because the Backlund line was solid, and the Dubé line with Mangiapane and Richie played much better, and the Monahan line had some good moments. But for me, it was the Backlund line and a second group being able to be a driver. Like they were very strong against the top two lines all night for the Rangers. They played exclusively against the Strom Panarin line or the Zibanejad line, and they did a really good job on both of them, and they dictated, they spent time on the attack, and Will, they scored a couple of goals. They needed another line to step up, and it's one game that's going to have to continue, but I thought that was maybe the most encouraging part of last night's effort.
For sure it was, and I think Daryl Sutter's been quoted a couple of times, whether it was earlier in this road trip or as Tyler Pitlick came back to the lineup, and you know he was asked for evaluations on that line and said that he would wait and wants to wait until, you know, Tyler Pitlick has played more and has gotten his feet under him. And I think last night we started to see what type of impact that that player can have when he's feeling good and has his timing back. So I'm with you. I thought that line was really, really good. And you've talked about it. I think it was yesterday on the show that, you know, Coach Daryl Sutter really likes the Backlund and Coleman pairing. And I would suggest that so far, they have they've been really, really good, and now you can maybe add Pitlick to that and become a trio. And it's funny because that was the theme of the show yesterday, was which line or how is this team going to get more out of their other three lines, because we've, you know, like what we've seen so far from that top line. And last night was the Backlund line stepping up, and tonight they're probably going to need somebody else, because let's not forget that not only is it the first back-to-back of the season, it's also the third game in 4 days for this Calgary Flames team.
Few texts, 960-960. This reads 14 back-to-back. That's insane. Like 28 total games, or you mean 14 games that are back-to-back and 7 pairs? No, there are 14, as you responded to that texter, Will. There are 14 pairs of back-to-backs for the Flames this year, higher than, as Will just said, the last time there was an Olympic year in the NHL, 13-14, when there were 12 pairs of back-to-backs. That is a lot. And I like this one. This is, and I think it's fair, says, last year, they would have definitely lost after those goals. And I don't think that's unfair. I do think, and it's 5 games in. There's still the vast majority. I believe they're 6.1% of the way through their season. So there's still the vast majority of the year needs to be played. But I think you could make a very, very salient argument that that game against Washington on Saturday with the Capitals pushing and they scored 3 in a row, Flames probably would have found a way to lose that game knowing the way things were going last year. And that goal the Rangers scored early in the third, that in recent years could have rattled this group and maybe been a big momentum swing. Well, in both the games in question, Saturday and yesterday, Flames did a nice job of not letting that happen. And if that is a trend that we're going to see going forward, that's a good thing. And if these are harbingers of things to come, it could be a pretty nice year and an expectation exceeding year for the Flames. But I also say we're 5 games in, and so they're going to have to keep on doing this, Will, for that to be the case.
No, they're going to win 78 in a row, Pat.
I don't think that's going to happen. But if it were to happen, I think that it would be a pretty solid year for the Flames.
Be record setting.
I think it would be. I think that we could safely say, without doing a lot of research, that a 78 game win streak would probably be an NHL record. One more before we move on to the big story in the hockey world. One more Flames trend we want to get to today. It is time for the Big Show deep dive.
More than just the box score. Serious analysis, in-depth stats. This is the Big Show Deep Dive on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Brought to you by PlayAlberta.ca. Sports betting is now live at PlayAlberta.ca. Enjoy a $20 free bet on your first deposit. Conditions apply. Must be 18 plus. If you gamble, use your game sense.
Well, I'm really liking what we're seeing right now from Calgary's, I guess you'd call it their second defense pairing, and that's the pairing of Chris Tanev on the right and Oliver Shillington on the left. This is now three consecutive games they've played together, and that pairing has been night and day better. And I get that we're talking about small sample sizes, but night and day better than when Tanev was playing with Zadorov. And just for the deep dive analytics numbers, here's what we're talking about for Shillington and Tanev together. In the three games, they've played 46 minutes and 37 seconds of 5-on-5 time together. The 5-on-5 shot attempts on ice, 46-35 in favor of the Flames. So that's 56.8% possession. Scoring chances, 24-10 at even strength in favor of Calgary, including 7-5 at high danger. And here is the thing, Will, that is the most encouraging to me, and not surprising knowing that Tanev is on this pairing, but we're talking about an Oliver Shillington defense pairing with an offensive zone start ratio under 45%, 43.8%. So they are starting far more shifts in their own zone compared to the offensive zone. They are doing the job right now. And Tanev is obviously a huge heavy lifter, but Oliver Shillington has played well and has held his own on that pairing. I am really liking the way that is trending. It's three games, but that's a very encouraging sign.
Absolutely. And I mean, it kind of leads into the next question, which is, when does Zadorov get back in? What does that look like?
I do not know.
Because this pairing has been head and shoulders better without Zadorov. And this defense core has been better without Zadorov. So tough luck when you're paying the guy, you know, what you're paying him, albeit on a 1-year contract. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe as we said, going into when he was first scratched off this team's lineup, maybe there is some health issues there. Maybe he's not back up to 100% or isn't feeling 100%. But yeah, right now, as you say, three games, they've won all three. They've looked way better. Chris Tanev has looked way better. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So I do wonder what that looks like and kind of the future, you know, with Zadorov. I think we've talked a lot about eight defensemen and when does that get resolved? Well, I don't even know right now if I would have Zadorov higher than number 7 on this team's depth chart. So even, you know, when healthy. So we'll see how that pans out. But on a back-to-back, maybe he slides his way back in tonight and maybe Shillington stays and we see Zadorov on the bottom pairing. I don't know. But that certainly is a looming question right now.
Yeah. And, you know, how comfortable would you feel with Zadorov and Gudbranson as a pairing, for instance, or Zadorov and Valimaki, because I don't think you're changing your top two pairings the way they've played, even on the second half of a back-to-back. I don't know if there is a, like, there are ways that Zadorov gets back in, and maybe they do make that change. We don't know what the lineup is going to look like tonight. We don't know if Vladar is going to start. We don't know if Markstrom's going to start. I guess we missed that one. I'll get to that after the deep dive. But as of right now, there's not, like, an obvious way to get Zadorov back in. And I think the six that they've got right now have clearly been the best six they've had at any point this year, and that's three straight games of looking that way. So good on Shillington. Good on that pairing. They've been really good, and we'll see if that continues tonight against the New Jersey Devils. That is your Big Show Deep Dive.
Brought to you by PlayAlberta.ca. Sports betting is now live at PlayAlberta.ca. Enjoy a $20 free bet on your first deposit. Conditions apply. Must be 18 plus. If you gamble, use your game sense.
Well, we don't know if it's going to be Vladar or Markstrom tonight. If I were guessing, I'd go, my guess would be Vladar. And certainly if I were making the decision, I would go with him in this one.
Not making the decision?
They've taken the decision away from me. No, I used to make a lot of the calls. And now they don't anymore. I've made some bad ones, so they kind of took that decision-making capability away from me. I'd go Vladar. He did nothing to hurt his cause, I felt, in the game against Washington on Saturday.
Yeah, we just talked about the schedule, how heavy it is. I was impressed or surprised, even, I guess is the better word, that they played him outside of a back-to-back on that Saturday matinee in Washington. I'm with you. I don't think he did anything to suggest that he shouldn't be back in tonight. I know it's a small travel across the river to New Jersey, but I would go with Vladar tonight. There's no reason not to, and then you'd go back to Markstrom for the finale in Pittsburgh on Thursday.
We'll find out at 4:30 if that's the way the Flames are going to go when they hit the ice.
I'd be surprised if it was Markstrom tonight.
I would too. I would not be surprised if it's Vladar. I'll probably roll back in my chair if I see 25 leading him out on the it's a rolly chair, so it's not going to hurt. Logo gave me a really weird look. But yeah, I'll be surprised if they go with Markstrom in this one. Would not be beyond me to somehow hurt myself on a rolly chair. That would not be beyond me. Puck drop, 5 o'clock. Warm up starts at 4 o'clock. And warm up at the Prudential Center, when we'll find out about the lineup tonight, starts at 4:30 p.m. Big news in the hockey world. I really wish we didn't have to be talking about this, but we do. We'll close the opener on the Chicago Blackhawks. The investigation, the independent investigation into those sexual assault allegations has now been concluded. The NHL has levied a stiff fine. The Blackhawks have made changes as well. This is a massive stain on Chicago's legacy over the last decade. Here is earlier today Blackhawks CEO Danny Wirtz.
I also want to share that Stan Bowman has stepped aside. Rocky and I appreciate Stan's dedication to the Blackhawks and his many years of work for the team. However, we and he ultimately accept that in his first year as general manager, he made a mistake alongside our other senior executives at the time and did not take adequate action in 2010. None of the other executives who are involved in the Blackhawks' response in 2010 will be with the organization moving forward. Current Vice President of Hockey Strategy and Analytics, Kyle Davidson, will take on the role of interim general manager as we begin our search for new hockey operations leadership.
So if you did not listen to Sportsnet today to kick off the program, they had the entire news conference in its entirety. Well, it made your skin crawl when they were going through the report and not only the allegations and the graphic language in the report as they were delivering it, which made your skin crawl to begin with, but then when you start to really truly understand the lengths that the Blackhawks went to cover this up and the lengths they've gone to cover it up over the last decade. So Stan Bowman is out. Anyone else still employed who was involved in the situation is out. The NHL has fined the Blackhawks $2 million. They covered this thing up for a decade. They actively swept sexual assault allegations under the rug because they were in the middle of a playoff run and didn't want to deal with them. They were worried that it was going to hurt the team. And here we are, Will. People have lost their job. The Blackhawks organization looks just awful in this situation, and there were so many bad decisions that harmed individuals and did nothing to dispel the conversation about hockey culture made along the way. And here we are today, where this looks really bad on the league, it looks bad on the organization, it looks bad on the sport.
It does, and I think you said it nicely about hockey culture. It's very clear that hockey culture still has got a long ways to go. I think there has been some steps made, but there's no question that there's a lot of work that still needs to be done to making hockey culture a lot better. And, you know, I think some of the fallout that is yet to be seen, I think we're now keeping an eye on that. I know Gary Bettman had come out with a statement saying that he will meet individually with Kevin Cheveldayoff and Joel Quenneville, who denied knowing about this when first asked in July. And it was clear by the report today that that was not true. I guess I'll finish with this, and that's if John Gruden gets removed for decade-old emails, I honestly don't know how Joel Quenneville survives this. Yep. I think the Florida Panthers will be having to make a coaching change. I think it's a really bad look for him today. And as you say, they prioritized winning in the playoffs over letting something like this go public and making a story of it at that time. And so we'll see what happens in terms of the fallout with those two individuals. But yeah,
if you're, but to your point,
bad
Will,
look on the Blackhawks.
Like if you're, pardon? If you're Bettman, how do you not step in? Cause in that report, and I it's up on sportsnet.ca. It's up on the podcast of Sportsnet today. When the boys carried it live, like go back and listen to that middle section when the independent report is being laid out in some detail, not as detailed as the actual written report is, but go back and listen. And Joel Quenneville and Kevin Cheveldayoff, the head coach of the Florida Panthers and the GM of the Winnipeg Jets, respectively, these guys were not unaware of what was going on. And when that comes out, and then you've got Gary Bettman saying, I'm meeting with these guys independently, how do you not, based on what we have seen over the last number of years, based on how much the NHL pushed for the Flames to move away from Bill Peters, and rightfully so, going back to November 2019, I don't know how Joel Quenneville and Kevin Cheveldayoff, I don't know how the NHL can be okay with those guys still running their teams the way they do based on this. It would just be, you just fine the Blackhawks $2 million for this. If there's nothing, and if they just let these guys go about their business the way they have and say, well, you're with different teams now, that doesn't jive with the message the NHL is trying to send here. I'm with you. I don't know how those guys continue to be employed after this.
Yeah, hard to imagine myself. And as I say, we'll see where it goes. But I'm with you. I think you read those reports and you find out, you know, who was involved in those meetings at that time. It's hard to imagine those two gentlemen being employed much longer in their respective jobs.
And then there's Stan Bowman, who is currently leading Team USA's Olympic entry, which is,
I haven't heard anything from USA Hockey yet, hey?
Not as of yet, not that I've seen anyway. And I really do encourage you to go follow along both our Tuesday, Wednesday NHL insider Frank Saravelli at Daily Faceoff and Sportsnet's NHL insider Elliot Friedman. A great summary. I'll read you Stan Bowman's response. This is verbatim. Since joining the Blackhawks in 2000, I've been extremely grateful for the opportunities presented to me and proud of our accomplishments. This organization, beginning with the Wirtz family, has been extraordinarily good to my family and to me. This is why today, after discussions with Rocky and Danny, I've decided to step aside. The team needs to focus on its future, and my continued participation would be a distraction. I think too much of the organization to let that happen. 11 years ago, while serving in my first year as general manager, I was made aware of potential inappropriate behavior by a then video coach involving a player. I promptly reported the matter to the then president and CEO, who committed to handling the matter. I learned this year that the inappropriate behavior involved a serious allegation of sexual assault. I relied on the direction of my superior that he would take appropriate action. Looking back, now knowing he did not handle the matter promptly, I regret assuming he would do so. I'm confident that this organization and the Wirtz family will continue to do what it takes to win championships with integrity and with the goal of doing what is right. I'm deeply grateful to the Blackhawks for the chance to manage the team, to the players for their dedication, and to their fans for their tremendous support over the years. It's been an honor to have been part of the incredible organization and to serve the best fans in hockey. That coming from Stan Bowman in his statement today, Will. It's like nobody comes away from this thing looking good. And here is the thing, and I ask this rhetorically, obviously not asking you this question, but how do you make so many awful decisions along the way? And you know, there are other different comparables, and I won't even throw out what the comparables are, but over the last decade or so, there have been comparable situations in professional sports or college sports that, you know, have been similar to this. But to just think that you could cover something up that serious and that damaging to an individual and expect it to never come out and then be surprised when it comes out, I cannot fathom, let alone the morality of it, my friend. Just the pure stupidity of it, and to not expect it to come back and reap, I'm trying to think of the right words, but to not come back and hurt you or come out down the road, I can't understand how logically you could think that way.
And someone texted me in this question, and I think it's important. I know that you and I made reference to this, I believe, when these reports came out in the summertime. We mentioned Quenneville and Cheveldayoff were asked about it in July. The exact same season, 2009-2010, was the same year with Bill Peters and Akeem Alou and their farm team in Chicago. So,
that's right, it was.
Interesting.
Never, did not put that together, but you're very right on that. Yep, that this is not what we look back at as a dynasty for the Blackhawks on the ice. Even the allegations of what we've heard from players and what players might have known at the time, hard to wrap your head around.
Mm-hmm.
Bad look. Well, that doesn't even begin to sum it up for the Chicago Blackhawks, my friend. That more on this as the day goes along, and more on this, I imagine, over the next weeks and months in the NHL. To you, my friend, what do we got coming up next?
Well, we are now into week number 8 in the NFL. The Green Bay Packers and Arizona Cardinals will kick things off in 2 days on a wicked showdown on Thursday Night Football, but to the Packers receiving core and receiving corpse, I should say, continues to take a beating. We'll explain that and get you set for week 8 in fantasy football. Joe Dolan joins us in a matter of moments right here. The Big Show continues live on a Flames game day. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to The Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Sportsnet 960's NFL Fantasy Football Insider, Joe Dolan. Brought to you by Gateway Mechanical. Switch and save 10% or more on commercial or refrigeration maintenance. Visit gatewaymechanical.ca.
Welcome back to the program. It's a Tuesday. It's a Calgary Flames game day. As Pat mentioned earlier, the first of 14 back-to-backs for the Calgary Flames this season. They're in New Jersey tonight. 5 o'clock puck drop. We're on the air at 4 with your Flames warm-up. We'll find out the lineup just after 4 o'clock. As, of course, on a back-to-back, no morning skate today, so no insight as to what that lineup looks like, who's in, who's out. And we'll find out a little bit after 4 o'clock. And again, Flames and Devils puck drop just after 5. Well, we're into week 8 of the NFL season, which is crazy to believe that we're that deep into the year. But week 7 came to an end last night. It's Tuesday. It's 2:30, which means we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in our fantasy insider from Fantasy Points. He is Joe Dolan. Joe, happy Tuesday. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, Will. Just hanging in there. Just coming off a bye-mageddon when, you know, I actually managed to survive it okay. And, I mean, despite, you know, a couple of really bad, you know, fill-in guys that started on Thursday night, quite frankly, last week, when Donovan Peoples-Jones, it came out that he got hurt in warm-ups basically after lineup lock. And that was a bad omen to the start of the week when a lot of people were playing him. But we're through it. We will not have another week this season with 6 teams on bye. There's 2 on bye this week. Going forward, there's a couple more with 4 on bye. But we made it through the thickest of the bye weeks thus far, and now we're about halfway through the fantasy regular season. I mean, it's amazing, but that's where we're at right now.
As someone who played against Donovan Peoples-Jones this week, I didn't have any problem with it. I'll be perfectly honest.
I just thought. That happens like twice a year.
Yeah.
And it was an island game. And you know what? Like that's really frustrating. I had some people who, I didn't do this. In one of the leagues I commish I had Donovan Peoples-Jones in my lineup, and I wasn't going to make that change. Like, I'm the commissioner. I'm not going to do it. But I would have done it for somebody else if they had asked. Fortunately, I was able to escape with a win in that league. And it's just, you know, the way a lot of people's lineups were this week was they didn't have a choice but to play other terrible options. So you were able to escape with a goose egg this week sometimes.
Well, maybe a good place to start then. It was an ill-timed dud by our boy Tim Patrick. He laid an egg in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He did lay an egg in that game, and now Jerry Jeudy's coming back. Jerry Jeudy's expected to play this week. Teddy Bridgewater has not played great football. Tim Patrick, our boy, who just continues to produce. I mean, now, unfortunately, Tim Patrick's back in the realm of the frustrating fantasy player, because with Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant and now ostensibly Jerry Jeudy back this week, Tim Patrick is not a guy you're going to want to have in a fantasy lineup. And I wouldn't be shocked if he starts producing more in these weeks when people don't want him to produce. That's just kind of been his typical role. And yeah, it was a dud of a game last Thursday night. And we had a terrible slate of primetime games in general, quite frankly. Not going to be the case this week, though.
Now, on that, while we're talking Broncos, just really quickly, we haven't only talked about this backfield since like early in the year, Joe. I want to say week one or week two, but what do you make of the split, or what we've seen, I guess, through the halfway point, as you mentioned, of the fantasy regular season from Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon?
Well, I think one of the things is people just kind of anticipated, and I'll fully admit it, I was part of the crew who anticipated that Melvin Gordon would be going away at some point. I anticipated that Melvin Gordon would just cede his role. He had major fumbling issues last year. And it hasn't been the case. Melvin Gordon has not gone away. Melvin Gordon has played all right, and he's played pretty well in the passing game. Now, fortunately, I think Javonte Williams has shown more than enough that he's going to have a consistent role moving forward. Still, he's only topped 50% of the snaps in two games thus far, so it hasn't been great. He kind of escaped with a touchdown, but we saw him now catch six passes in that game. He actually has more catches than Melvin Gordon on the season. Unfortunately, both of them are more RB2 flex options right now. I still think we're playing the long game with Javonte Williams, who's a better runner than Melvin Gordon. But at this stage, Melvin Gordon hasn't gone away, and I think you have to anticipate that right now. If Melvin Gordon gets hurt or gets benched or something, Javonte Williams is an RB1. And that's why I like that upside for him. That's why I was drafting him. But unfortunately, it just hasn't been the case thus far. Still, he's been productive enough that you can pop him into a lineup and not hate your life that you have to do it.
On the other side of that, as we, you know, just kind of wrap up with that Thursday night matchup to kick off week seven last week, Cleveland has got a mess of injuries. We don't know what the rest of the season outlook is for Baker Mayfield. If he does play, we don't really know what to expect. Kareem Hunt, of course, is injured. Nick Chubb should be back here pretty soon. And then we saw, of course, that great game from D'Ernest Johnson, which is probably a reflection of one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines in football right now with Cleveland. Your take on the Browns offense as it stands, and maybe the ROS outlook of some of the special Browns players that many fantasy owners would have here and are monitoring down the stretch.
I hate this offense. Hate it. Like, Baker's hurt. Case Keenum didn't get the ball to the receivers. Odell's hurt. Odell's playing through a really bad shoulder injury. I want nothing to do with him right now. The two guys I want on this team are Jarvis Landry, who's a wide receiver 3, and Nick Chubb right now. Kareem Hunt's going to be out for a while longer. I'd probably hold on to D'Ernest Johnson if I picked him up, just in case, you know, Nick Chubb aggravates that calf injury. But honestly, to be honest with you, Will, this is one of the worst offenses in all of fantasy football.
Yeah, I don't think many would disagree with you outside of the running backs, who continue to prove, as I mentioned, value behind that offensive line. He's Joe Dolan of Fantasy Points. He joins us every Tuesday. Talk all things fantasy as we get into week number 8. Green Bay and Arizona kick things off in what on paper was going to be one of the best games of the season. But Joe, COVID-19 is making its way through the Green Bay Packers receivers. Your take on Adams and now Alan Lazard. I saw you jokingly tweet, this is time for Jeff Janis.
Yeah, it's it's a bad situation now. We don't know for sure whether it's a positive test or just close contact. So that caveat aside, right now I wouldn't expect Lazard or Adams to play on Thursday night. Now, could the Packers get Marquez Valdes-Scantling back this week? That's a possibility. He's on IR, but he is apparently ready to practice and contribute. I would not be shocked if this is the kind of game where Aaron Rodgers just peppers targets to somebody who has chemistry with him, and that being Randall Cobb. He played a season-high snap share in week number 7. He had 62%, I believe. Don't be shocked if Randall Cobb becomes the guy here who just – they try to get through this game, get everybody healthy for week number 9 off the COVID list. Don't be surprised if Randall Cobb is the guy who makes a one-week impact here. I know people are going to be looking to Robert Tonyan, who finally did something last week. That's a possibility as well. Don't be shocked if Aaron Rodgers filters 8, 9, 10 targets to Randall Cobb's way in this one, though.
On the Arizona side, this is a team that, as we say, maybe doesn't use their tight ends a lot, but it was a pretty good debut for Zach Ertz.
Yeah, they're going to use him. I mean, he played 49% of the snaps after being with the team for a week. That's a good sign. I think he's going to be up in the 60 to 70% range. Zach Ertz at a position where, again, you know, Robert Tonyan was being drafted as a top 8 tight end. He hasn't done crap this year until last week. You had to reevaluate, you know, Dawson Knox, Dalton Schultz, these guys who had come from nowhere to produce. Zach Ertz is now somebody who could be a tight end one the rest of the season. And keep in mind, DeAndre Hopkins is dinged up. He's got a hamstring injury this week. No guarantee he plays. So Zach Ertz is certainly an option this week against Green Bay.
Another offense that you might hate, Joe, is the Philadelphia Eagles. Miles Sanders goes mm-hmm. down with an injury. Just when I think a lot of people maybe have dropped Gainwell, he becomes one of the top waiver ads as Miles Sanders yep. is out week to week. Your thought on the Eagles and everything happening there?
Well, let's start with one of the guy who's been really good in that offense, and that's Jalen Hurts. And he's been really good for fantasy. He's the quarterback 3. In fantasy. So, I mean, he's done a really good job. But here's the thing that worries me. Basically, half of his fantasy points have come in the fourth quarter. That means he's playing from behind. He's not doing a whole lot early in the game. Now the Eagles just kind of cleared the way for Gardner Minshew to be their backup quarterback. Now, if I were making decisions for the Eagles, I would probably give Jalen Hurts at least 3 or 4 more games to see if he can improve, step in there. They've had a tough schedule so far. You know, they got the Lions this week. I mean, full panic mode if the Eagles lose to the Lions this week, who looked feisty against the Rams. But it would be just putting my head in the sand if I were to say, look, Jalen Hurts is not going to get benched. There's no chance of that. It would be putting my head in the sand. And it's important to say that because he's been so good for fantasy. Like, if you have Jalen Hurts on your fantasy team and you haven't watched a down of Eagles football this year, you're like, yeah, baby, like Jalen Hurts, like he's carrying my team. But the reality is this is an Eagles team in serious transition. They have to evaluate both their quarterback position and their coaching staff. They have 3 first-round picks next year. So this is a team that is in no way beholden to Jalen Hurts. And they probably will want to take a look at Gardner Minshew if Jalen Hurts proves beyond most of a reasonable doubt that he is not the guy. So that's the thing I'm concerned about with Philadelphia. Now, if Minshew comes in, it's possible their passing game improves. It's possible their offense improves overall. But it's been a tough go of it for Jalen Hurts. And I don't think he's been particularly well coached here. And, you know, the Eagles have to be doing a whole lot of mirror looking right now because it has not been pretty at all.
He's Joe Dolan of Fantasy Points. He joins us every single Tuesday to talk all things fantasy football. We're into week number 8 of the season, and crazy to think that we're now in the second half. We're getting into the second half of your fantasy football schedule as all eyes now on week 8. As Joe mentioned off the top, we're through that bye nightmare in week 7, and eyes are focused on the Sunday here. In week number 8. So we talked a little bit about the primetime game as we transition into Sunday and some of those storylines. You look at another offense that you might hate, Joe. What's going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers and your trust level with their passing game, knowing that Big Ben is certainly a shadow of his former self?
Well, I'm starting to like it a little bit more. I mean, Big Ben has actually looked somewhat functional the last couple of weeks. And again, you never root for injuries. Juju Smith-Schuster is a great guy, and you know, I feel terrible for him about his contract situation after hitting the free agent market after a down season in the pandemic, you know, cap-strapped season. But his injury has narrowed this target tree to a lot of Deontay Johnson, a lot of Chase Claypool, and a lot of Najee Harris. Najee Harris is a phenomenal fantasy running back right now. Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool, Johnson more so than Claypool, are guys you have to start every week. And, you know, maybe Pat Freiermuth steps up. Maybe James Washington becomes somebody who can play. But, no, I'm actually a little more optimistic from a fantasy perspective on this Pittsburgh offense. It's an easy offense for me to analyze.
What about in Indianapolis? He doesn't get a ton of targets, but he's making the most of them, and that's Michael Pittman Jr. We talked a little bit about T.Y. Hilton last week. He obviously didn't play with that quad injury. We don't know his status for week 8. Probably a better chance he does play. But what's your thought on Indy as Carson Wentz has been playing a little bit better here? And as I say, Michael Pittman doesn't get a lot of targets, but he does lots with them.
Yeah, it's not a high volume passing offense. They've been trying to control Carson Wentz here, and it's worked so far. But you know, you look at that game in the rain last week against the 49ers. You know, that touchdown Pittman scored at the end of the game. I mean, that ball was squirted up there. I mean, I thought the corner was going to pick it off, and Pittman just went up and got it. And you know, Wentz said after the game, he's like, "That's what happens when you trust a receiver. You know, things don't have to be perfect. That receiver can go up and make plays." Michael Pittman's the guy you should have in your lineup every week right now, because that trust factor, you know, Wentz saying, all right, this ball doesn't have to be perfect for Michael Pittman to go catch this ball. You know, you look at Wentz the last couple of years in Philly, and A, number one, the guy to blame for Carson Wentz's performance is Carson Wentz. You have to acknowledge that. But there were also times in Philly the last couple of years where Wentz did make good throws. You know, you think back to the times of Nelson Aguilar and the ball was dropped. Or, you know, Wentz didn't make a perfect play, but he was under duress and it hit the receiver in the hands and he still didn't make a play. And eventually, you know, Wentz was probably thinking to himself, I've got to get a guy who can make a play for me. It feels like he's got that guy in Michael Pittman. So he's a guy I want in my lineup every week right now because Wentz trusts him. Just don't expect, as you said, a whole lot of targets, because this is not a high volume passing offense.
Last couple for you, Joe, and the first one's in Chicago on Khalil Herbert. We talked a bit about him last week. He impressed again against a really good defensive front seven in Tampa, and it sounds like Herbert has impressed enough that even when Montgomery comes back, he is still going to be a guy with a role. What's your ROS outlook on Khalil Herbert?
Oh, the problem for his ROS outlook is this offense. Justin Fields has been miserable. I mean, he's been the worst quarterback in football. His EPA, his points added per dropback, is worse than that of Davis Mills. Now, you can blame whatever you want on that. I'm just like stating facts here. This has been a bad offense. Khalil Herbert's been the only thing working for this offense the last couple weeks. I wonder if he's going to cede his here's the question. How do they view him moving forward? Do they view him as somebody who can be like a change of pace to David Montgomery, or do they view him more as a backup to David Montgomery with Damian Williams as the third down back? So I don't really know the answer to that question. I wish I could tell you this is a good team and a good offense, and this is somebody I want on my roster, like a Javonte Williams, because I know even if there's a split, he's going to be productive enough. I frankly don't know the answer to that question. I don't think this is a player who is droppable when David Montgomery comes back, because he's looked too good. The problem is the offense around him that's really giving me pause into committing to any sort of long-term outlook for Khalil Herbert. When David Montgomery comes back, I'd probably consider him a flex option.
Last one for you, and I'm sure you've gotten this a lot here, Joe, the last couple of weeks. I don't know, but it sure seems like the RPO, the run-pass option, has kind of ruined this Kansas City Chiefs offense. What is happening in Kansas City?
Well, we talked about the Philly offense. That Philly offense is all RPOs as well, and it doesn't seem to be very effective. And what's happening in Kansas City is, you know, a couple of bad draft classes. The fact that you're paying your quarterback $500 million on a salary cap roster – Mahomes making bad decisions. And look, his game, I mean, obviously he's had more success than Carson Wentz, but his game at his best was very similar to that of Wentz when Wentz was playing MVP football in 2017. Run around, make ridiculous plays that a normal quarterback shouldn't even think of making because you're so talented. And it takes defenses by surprise. You just use that unbelievable physical ability to make plays. And, you know, right now he's dealing with an under-talented roster with a banged-up offensive line. He's dealing with a coaching staff that's essentially decided, all right, Patrick, go make a play. And that's the plan. And that is something that is not sustainable. And Mahomes is dinged up. You know, again, the offensive line, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are both dinged up. It's a problem across the board for this Kansas City offense. And look, would I bet against them turning this around? Absolutely not. Am I benching Tyreek Hill? Absolutely not. Am I benching Patrick Mahomes? No. But I don't think this is a blip on the radar. Like, this team has looked eminently beatable. Yeah. And I don't think it's just one of those things where, like, teams have gone on punch for punch with them and have come out ahead. Tennessee dominated them. And this is a team that was dominated in the Super Bowl, and that had never been the case for Kansas City in the Patrick Mahomes era.
Just finally, as we let you go, 20 seconds or less, anybody we missed that's a glaring omission from this discussion when talking about the waiver wire tomorrow, Joe?
I mean, Russell Gage of Atlanta is somebody who came in and played really well in his return from injury. I think that's somebody who you can look at for sure. But then also, you know, Tyrod Taylor, if you need a quarterback, he might be somebody who you can go out there and pick up because I think he's going to start here pretty soon. And then Rashad Bateman of Baltimore, if he's out there, go get him.
You're a good man, Joe. You can check him out on Twitter at @FG_Dolan. He joins us every Tuesday on The Big Show. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll catch up in exactly 1 week's time. Thanks, Joe.
All right, Will. Thanks.
Sportsnet 960's NFL Fantasy Football Insider, Joe Dolan. Brought to you by Gateway Mechanical. Switch and save 10% or more on commercial or refrigeration maintenance. Visit gatewaymechanical.ca.
When we come back, as we continue on a game day Tuesday on The Big Show, we've got a very, very condensed version of The Big Show today. We got some Flames roundtable action around the corner, plus a look back on October 26th in Flames history. We're into hour two of a 2-hour program on your game day Tuesday, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time for the first back-to-back of the season. Flames-Devils tonight. Pat Steinberg has our pregame warm-up fired up at 4 p.m. Derek and Peter have the call at 5. On the air and streaming on any device. Listen to Flames hockey anywhere. Calgary, New Jersey, right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Calgary Flames hockey is brought to you by Paradise Bay Home Leisure and Shane Holmes.
Let's be honest, we're all dreaming about travel these days. What dream vacation are you dreaming about right now? You a big city person, like to go overseas? Whatever the case may be, beaches, mountains, outdoors, our friends at Air Miles are hosting the Flight a Day giveaway from October 21st to November 10th. You could win one of 21 daily prizes of a $5,000 flight voucher and a grand prize of a $25,000 flight voucher. Maybe you'd be bringing your spouse, your loved one, your significant other. Maybe it's the kids, a family trip, a boys trip, whatever. To get in on the winning, all you have to do is scan your Air Miles card at participating partners. Does not get any easier than that. And the best part is the flight vouchers do not expire. They can be used whenever you're ready to fly. So if you want to save it for a honeymoon, if you want to save it for an anniversary, a birthday, it all works. When you're ready to travel, when is your favorite time of year to get away? If you're looking for a little extra gravy, the more you use your Air Miles card during their Flight a Day giveaway, the more chances you'll have to win. There's no purchase necessary required, and the contest rules apply. Head to airmiles.ca/flightaday to view their participating partners and start swiping.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames history starts now.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Wild Rose Brewery offers an all-Albertan premium craft beer for everyone. You might be a player, but you're always a fan, and to that, we cheers. Enjoy Wild Rose at home or at their tap room in Southwest Calgary.
Hour two of a two-hour show underway. Top of the hour, we've got the Devils and Flames and your pregame show leading up to a 5 o'clock puck drop from Prudential Center in Newark. Daily Flames Roundtable in mere minutes, but first, the October 26th edition, this date in Flames history. I have got three first career NHL goals for you, starting in 1983. Undrafted free agent signing out of Clarkson University, the one, the only, Colin Patterson scored his first career NHL goal on this date in 1983 as part of a 5-4 Flames win over the St. Louis Blues. He'd go on to play 416 games with Calgary. Of course, won a Stanley Cup with them in 1989.
Certified.
One of the absolute best. He was a big part of those 80s teams and has also turned into just an unbelievable ambassador for the Flames, the alumni, and for the city of Calgary. So congrats to Colin Patterson scored his first career NHL goal on this date in 1983. On this date 19 years ago, 2002, Jordan Leopold scored his first career NHL goal. Flames fell 4-3 in overtime to the Blues. And on this date 10 years ago, Flames taking on the Colorado Avalanche.
Ginla shooting on net, Jagr the save. The puck loose in front. He scores! Roman Horak! And the Flames have tied the game at 1-1 on Horak's first ever NHL goal.
Roman Horak was part of the acquisition that sent Tim Erickson to the New York Rangers. They got Horak and a pair of second-round picks that turned into Wotherspoon and Granlund. And Roman Horak scored his first career NHL goal on this date in 2011. One other quick one from an on-ice perspective. Chris Russell scored his first goal as a member of the Flames as part of a 5-2 win over Washington on this date in 2013. And finally, one transaction this date. Flames acquired defenseman Frank Musial from the Minnesota North Stars in exchange for defenseman Brian Glynn. That's on this date in 1990. If you're a Flames fan from the 90s, you'll know the name Frank Musial. He'd go on to spend five seasons with Calgary, 18 goals, 63 points in 335 games. So three first career goals, a few other notes, and a transaction all on the October 26th edition of this date in Flames history.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Wild Rose Brewery offers an all-Albertan premium craft beer for everyone. You might be a player, but you're always a fan, and to that, we cheers. Enjoy Wild Rose at home or at their tap room in Southwest Calgary.
We are underway on this Tuesday edition of The Big Show, leading towards puck drop at 5 o'clock and your Calgary Flames warm-up, Flames Devils at 4 o'clock. My name is Pat Steinberg. His name is Will Nault, and now Derek Wills joins us, the radio voice of the Calgary Flames. It is time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills.
I'm Colin Gingell from Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Winning Automotive News Best Dealership to Work For is an honor for our entire team.
Gents, Flames have won three in a row. They take on the Devils, looking for four in a row tonight. And in these three wins, there has been a constant, or a few constants. One of those constants, the three defense pairings. I'm going to ask you about one of those pairings, and specifically the guy on the left side. How good has Oliver Shillington been these last three games for the Flames?
He's been really good. And it's funny because over the last couple of years, we've talked about Chris Tanev being a player who makes his partner better. I actually think that Shillington has made Tanev better in the games they've been paired together. I know that sounds crazy, but Tanev, to me, didn't look like himself playing at a pairing with Nikita Zadorov. And all of a sudden, he gets paired up with Oliver Shillington. He looks like the same guy we saw consistently play at a high level last season. And Oliver Shillington appears to have finally, in his ninth pro season, taken the step that the Flames were hoping he would take and that he was hoping he would take a long time ago. You know, we've always talked about his elite skating, and that certainly is, I think, his best attribute. But I just think he's a lot better defensively now and understands when to try to use that skating to get involved in the rush offensively and when to hang back and make sure things are taken care of in his own zone. I've just seen huge steps from Shillington this season, and I know it's a small sample size, but so far so good on that second pairing with Tanev.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think he's less reliant on his speed to make up for mistakes. He's way more aware on his stick, using it to his advantage. I think he's done so many good things so far. It's just been three games, as we say. But as I mentioned earlier in the program to you, Pat, right now I don't feel like there's any reason to remove him from the lineup. I think you give what you saw in training camp some pause, and then you look at what he's done so far in his three appearances this season. He's been better than Zadorov, and that pairing's been better without Zadorov, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I think Oliver Schilling deserves a ton of credit for what he's done. And we talked about one of the biggest stories around him going into the year was when he gets his opportunity, he's going to have to show that he can be consistent. And that's been his biggest issue so far in his NHL career. It's why he hasn't been able to stay in the lineup, is he's had, you know, maybe one or two good games, and then it falls off. And, you know, we'll see if he can keep it going. It's only been three, but so far it's been dramatically and drastically different than what we've seen earlier in his career. And we give him a lot of credit. He's done some good work, and he's looked really good in these three games for the Flames.
Yeah, and I think that the point, Derek, you make about him making Tanev better, I agree in that. I just think there's a trust there. I think that trust was formed in the preseason when they played together. There were a couple of instances last night in the win over the Rangers where you could just tell that there's a comfort level that is starting to be formed between the two, and specifically for Tanev. It just, in the preseason, in the regular season, it never looked natural with Tanev and Zadorov playing together, whereas it feels far more secondhand and far more natural with Shillington there. And I also think that, as I think Shillington has helped Tanev return to the guy that we know he can be. And I also think that if you're Oliver, you're playing with this rock solid defensive defenseman that makes very few mistakes with the puck on or off his stick. And I think that just boosts the confidence level for a guy like Oliver, yeah, to whether it be jump into the play or, you know how we always talk about how it's important for a player not to go out there with the fear of making a mistake? Well, I think that because he's playing with Tanev, that fear almost gets wiped away, because if you do, quote-unquote, make a mistake by taking a risk, well, then you know that your guy is going to be there to help clean up for you. So it probably plays into the way Oliver plays the game and allows him to play with just a little bit more of that natural confidence and has him thinking a whole lot less out there. He's been great, and I thought they were dynamite. Best pairing on the ice, I thought, last night in New York.
Yeah, I think Chris Tanev has given Oliver Shillington confidence. And I think Daryl Sutter has given Oliver Shillington confidence with the way he's put him in a position to play more minutes, with what he said about him to the media. I think confidence has to be at an all-time high for a guy who really has never lacked confidence. But earlier in his career, he probably had too much confidence, bordering on cockiness. And now I just think he's way more confident in his ability to play the game at the NHL level. And the other thing that's really jumped out to me about Oliver so far this season is he's playing fast. And that's what Daryl Sutter wants this team to do. And playing fast goes beyond skating fast. I think Oliver is processing the game a lot quicker now than he ever has. And instead of, you know, using that split second to try to decide what to do or where to go, he's just acting instinctually now. And that comes with experience. And maybe it's easier to play that way when you're playing with a guy like Chris Tanev. I'm sure it is. But I think Oliver Shillington deserves a ton of credit. For me, he belongs in their top four right now. And we'll see if he can keep it going.
Yep. And so far, so good on that front for Oliver Shillington, as our Daily Flames Roundtable is underway with Derek Wills, Will Nault. And my name is Pat Steinberg. Guys, last night, the line of Michael Backlund, Blake Coleman, and Tyler Pitlick really drove the bus. They were kind of the driving force on the victory for the first time this season. Success for the Flames without the Lindholm line being the one kind of at the forefront. It feels like that line with Backlund, Coleman, and Pitlick has slowly progressed each and every game they've been together. Backlund and Coleman have kind of been playing as a forward pairing since game two against Anaheim. But what could that trio end up being for this team?
Well, we'll have to wait and see if they're together long term. I think there's a chance that they will be. But I also think there's a chance that Blake Coleman ends up playing on a line with Elias Lindholm or Sean Monahan at some point in time. So we'll have to wait and see And Coleman gives you the versatility to be able to play left wing, which he's doing right now, or right wing, where he's spent the majority of his career. But and it's a really good line for the Flames. At least it has been in the small sample size we've seen them together. Michael Backlund, when he's on his game, is one of the better two-way centermen in the NHL. Doesn't have the offensive upside that some guys do, although he had a goal and an assist last night. But defensively, you can play him against the other team's top players and you can count on him. And Blake Coleman's another guy who is a really good 200-foot player and didn't know as much about Tyler Pitlick. He's a big guy who can skate and is a pain in the butt to play against. But, you know, he's been a good fit on the right side of that line. And you're right, Pat. I thought they did a great job against a really talented first line for the Rangers last night. And it's funny because in our pregame show yesterday, I asked Peter Laviolette the question, okay, what happens when the Flames' first line of Elias Lindholm, Johnny Gaudreau, and Matthew Tkachuk cools off? Who's going to pick up the slack offensively? And last night, a bunch of guys chipped in. Andrew Mangiapane scored two more goals. But really, that line was the Flames' best line. And one of the big reasons why they beat the Rangers by a final score of 5-1. So you've got two really good 200-foot players in Backlund and Coleman. And I don't mean to exclude Pitlick from that group because I'm just learning about him as a player on this Flames team. But three guys who seem to work well together and who complement each other. And again, much like we just talked about that second defense pairing, that forward line so far so good in their time together.
As you say, we'll wait and see what plays out. But the biggest problem in the last, what, 3-4 years for this Flames team was their inability to find consistent lines and the constant juggling. We've even heard that from players, whether it be Gaudreau and Monahan, about who was playing on the right side with them. Matthew Tkachuk's talked about it as well, that it's hard to find chemistry when you're consistently changing line mates. Right now, that top line, I'm not touching them, even when they do cool down. I am not touching them. And right now, what we've seen, especially as Tyler Pitlick starts to get back up to speed, Daryl Sutter loves Coleman and Backlund together. I don't see that changing. And I think Pitlick is a great third to that line. So right now, Pat, I don't think that's going to change, at least not in the near future. Who knows what March or April of next year holds. But right now and for the next month, I don't see that being a change. I think that Daryl Sutter loves what he's seen from his top trio, and he's trying to find something else in that next nine. And the combination of Pitlick, Coleman, and Backlund has been terrific, especially as Pitlick gets back up to speed after his injury. Daryl Sutter's talked about that, how he wasn't really even going to evaluate them until Pitlick was back up to speed. Last night was Coleman's best game as a Flame. Pitlick finally looked like he was back and got some of his timing back. So I don't think they're going to change. And I think this line can be a very, very good two-way line for this team. And Backlund and Coleman both have a history in this league of still putting up points while being solid two-way players. And this Calgary Flames team is going to need every bit of secondary scoring they can get. And it was nice to see that last night in New York. And right now, I think this is forming to be a really, really good trio for the Flames. And I don't see that changing at any point here in the near future.
The one thing that I really think has a chance of sticking long term, whether Pitlick remains on the line or not, which
the
I can absolutely see.
Duo.
Yeah, the Backlund Coleman duo, I think, has a chance to be a really important one for the Flames. And I found it very interesting today, without even being provoked, I just asked Coleman about, you know, the similarities between the other two guys on the line. And he kind of said it reminds him of the line he played so much with in Tampa Bay with Barkley Goodrow and Yanni Gord. And that was just, if that's what it turns into, and they can be as effective and important on the Flames as they were with Tampa. And I understand that there's no Kucherov or Point or you know, the same type of high-end talent doesn't exist in Calgary as it did in Tampa. And the forward depth isn't the same. But if they can be an effective two-way line like that line was for Tampa, that could go a long way for the Flames. And I think the duo of Coleman and Backlund could absolutely be that. And if Pitlick can show that he belongs to stay there, and, you know, he's a really, really sound defensive guy, has built a reputation, Pitlick has, of being an eraser and being able to play well in defensively slanted situations, I think he can be a longer-term complement to that group. So they've got the potential to be a very, very important trio and definitely an important duo on this team.
And all three guys play the game with edge. And that's something else that I like about the line. And I had a great chat with Michael Backlund this morning, and we'll hear that coming up on Mr. Fireplace Flames warm-up. And he talks a little bit about his two line mates, Blake Coleman and Tyler Pitlick. So stay tuned for that. But it's a line that helped the Flames win that hockey game last night. As a matter of fact, they, I think, led the way in the Flames defeating the Rangers 5-1 last night. And we'll see if they can be as effective against the Devils in the second half of a back-to-back tonight.
Speaking of the Devils, let's end there on the Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Will Nault, Pat Steinberg, they're 3-1-0 on the year. They have definitely made some changes. What's our feel on New Jersey this season?
The truth is, Pat, I don't really have a feel for the Devils. I mean, it's been forever since I saw the team play in person, and they've been absolutely awful against the Flames over the years. The Flames have won 6 straight games against the Devils. They're 12-2-0 in their last 14. Going back to 2011-2012, that .857 point percentage is the Flames' best versus any opponent in the NHL during that period of time. And the duo of Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, and I know they probably won't play together 5-on-5 tonight, they have absolutely eaten the Devils for lunch. Remember, Johnny Gaudreau had that 6-point game against his home state team. He's got 20 points in 11 games against the Devils, and maybe tonight's the night Sean Monahan gets off the schneid and snaps his long 11-game goalless and pointless streaks dating back to last season, because he's got 10 goals and 18 points in his 13 career games against the Devils. But you know, this is a Devils team that just isn't what it used to be, and I do think they have some really good young players. I mean, a couple of former first overall picks, and Nico Hischier, who we will see tonight, and unfortunately for the Devils, Jack Hughes, who has missed the last couple of games with a shoulder injury, and they're not even sure when they're going to get him back. Another good young player, Pavel Zacha, a former sixth overall pick, leads the team with 2 goals and is tied for the team lead with 3 points. So they've got some good young players, but they're without their number 1 and 2 goaltenders right now. They're hoping to get Mackenzie Blackwood back from a heel injury sometime soon, but he's missed the first 4 games of the season. Jonathan Bernier played and played well in the first couple of games, and now he's out with a lower body injury. So, you know, this is a Devils team that's, because I don't see them very often, and because they're banged up right now, a little bit of an enigma for me, because they were awful last season, absolutely awful. Finished with 19 wins and 45 points and 26 points out of a playoff spot in the East Division. A team that's missed the playoffs in 8 of the last 9 seasons after they made the playoffs in 20 of the previous 22 seasons. So I do think that they've got some potential, but until they prove it by winning hockey games consistently, I'm having a hard time buying into this team.
And much like the Calgary Flames, we don't know what their lineup looks like tonight, as they didn't hold a morning skate either. The good news is it looks like Mackenzie Blackwood's making his way back after getting his first vaccination shot last week. They've got some really good young pieces, but I'm with Derek. I don't have a huge feel on what this team is. I think they've taken some steps in the right direction. They've made some pretty big splashes in the free agent market the last couple of years. Dougie Hamilton, of course, the latest. Thomas Tatar has been a good pickup for them, 3 assists in 4 games. And I think that this is a young team that's going to be growing together, and they're just not ready to take that next step. I think the biggest positive for this Devils team is after a really hard rookie season, it's unfortunate that he's injured right now, but Derek mentioned it. After a tough rookie season, Jack Hughes is finally looking like that guy who's deserving of the number 1 pick overall. He had 2 goals and 3 points in 2 games before he went down with that injury and now on injured reserve. They've got some good goaltending early in the year from Bernier and Nico Daws, who made his first NHL start over the weekend against the Buffalo Sabres. Stopped a lot of shots, and they won that game in overtime 2-1 as he stopped 24-25. So a young Devils team, Pat, that I just don't think we know enough about, and I don't think we're expecting to be involved in the playoff discussion, but I still think they're going to be a pretty exciting team, and they've got some pieces to like, and the fact they could sign Dougie Hamilton for as long as they did, there's a chance he's there when these young players take that next step. And one of the hidden storylines of the game tonight, because of the pandemic and playing just in your division last season, Blake Coleman's back in New Jersey for the first time in 619 days. He last played, he was traded, February 16th of 2022, Tampa from New Jersey, and has not been back to Jersey since. 619 days.
Huh.
So you can look for the Blake Coleman revenge game tonight.
He even talked a little bit about that today. He said, yeah, he was kind of at first sad when he got traded. New Jersey was the team that drafted him. Obviously, it worked out pretty well for him.
We're doing all right.
Yeah. He said, yeah, when I took a look at it in the bigger picture.
Got a little jewelry.
Yeah, a couple new, you know, $15,000 rings or whatever they are. I'm interested in this team. Like it sounds like they're leaning towards going with Nico Daws as the starting goaltender tonight. So I'm interested to watch him in action. They have done some significant revamping on their blue line. There's no doubt about that. Going out to add Graves and add Hamilton to that group that already had Severson and Subban on it. So they've definitely taken some steps forward in terms of their blue line depth. It's too bad Jack Hughes isn't playing. I would have liked to see him, especially knowing how good a start he was off to this season. But yeah, do I expect the Devils to be in the playoff mix? No. Do I think that they're a team that can, if you're not on your game with their speed and some of the way their young talent can get at you with speed, I do think they can cause some problems if you're not on it. Flames play the way they did for most of last night. I think they'll be okay in this one, but I do think for the first time in a long time that New Jersey is actually pointing and trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And when you get enough first overall picks and high first round picks, sooner or later you're going to accumulate enough talent to be at least dangerous. And I do think the Devils are, when healthy, a dangerous team because of their high skill level. They're also without Miles Wood right now. He's missed the first four games of the season with a lower body injury. He's actually week to week and a little further away, but he's one of their better players as well. But it's tough to win in this league when you don't score a lot. And here's where I'll leave you guys. The duo of Elias Lindholm and Andrew Mangiapane have as many goals this season as the New Jersey Devils do. 11.
See how that plays itself out tonight at Prudential Center. Okay, Derek, play-by-play in about 90 minutes. Thank you, sir.
All right, see you soon, guys.
Derek Wills, Will Nault, Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills.
I'm Colin Gingell for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. We will buy your Mercedes-Benz vehicle today. MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca.
Up next, Logan Gordon, biggest stories of the day. We've got headlines around the corner. Stay with us. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sports Drive at 5, brought to you by South Trail Hyundai. Come into Calgary's number one Google-rated Hyundai dealer and enjoy no payments for the rest of the year and a great selection. SouthTrailHyundai.com.
On farms across Canada, chickens fantasize about what they'll become.
Soy sensation.
Suicide!
Sultry ginger.
Thanks to Mugshot Sports Bar and Grill, every year over 250,000 chickens fulfill their destiny in over 50 original gourmet wing ways.
At Mugshots, we use only the best Canadian-raised chickens.
Our wings are always fresh and local with original gourmet sauces.
Mugshot Sports Bar and Grill, corner of Blackfoot Trail and Ogden Road.
As Desjardins agents, we take the time to get to know you. Because the more we know, the better advice we can give. So your vintage vinyl collection? The original Bentwood Lounger? The 1963 solid body guitar with double cutaway, triple humbuckers, and whammy bar? Rock on, Rockstar. We've got you covered.
Switch and save up to 35% on home insurance when you bundle with auto. Get a quote at DesjardinsAgents.com. Desjardins Insurance. Home, auto, life. Exclusions and conditions apply.
It's time for your annual flu shot. To get yours, simply visit your nearest Shoppers Drug Mart. Protect yourself. Getting the flu shot is your best defense against the flu. Talk to your Shoppers Drug Mart pharmacist for more information. Subject to availability.
Did you know Motorworks can beat any competitor's quote? If your BMW needs repairs or service, bring it to Motorworks for the best quality work along with the best price. Motorworks on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast.
ATB is built to help Albertans, like Dr. Al Ulcifer from FYI Doctors.
We're pretty grateful that ATB saw the potential that we saw, and they've been a supportive partner.
ATB is proud to have helped FYI Doctors become Canada's largest eye care provider.
Having a financial partner that supports your story is absolutely critical to doing what you want to be able to do in today's competitive world.
ATB, built to help Albertans.
I never know when to switch to winter tires, you know?
When it drops below 7 degrees.
I just wish there was some kind of a rule. Or...
when it drops below 7 degrees, change to winter tires.
You know, based on science.
Below 7 degrees, the rubber compound of all-season tires hardens, leading to reduced traction even on dry asphalt. The softer rubber compound of winter tires grips cold surfaces better.
I guess we'll never know.
Come into your nearest Prairie Toyota dealer today and we'll beat any competitor's tire price by 5%, thanks to our Price Beat Promise. When it comes to winter tires, details make the difference.
Terms and conditions apply.
What?
You know they grip well. That they get around well. And keep you safe. Advanced winter traction so that you can have fun this winter. Nitto Tires, are you ready for the adventure?
Calgary Co-op Pharmacy is here to help you get ahead of flu season with flu shots and other vaccinations available in-store for your convenience. Leafy kale for your shakes, juicy citrus for your salads, and vitamins for your early mornings. It's whole health for your whole body. And it all begins right here at your local Calgary Co-op. Learn more at calgarycoop.com today.
10% of this ad is used to bring you... who couldn't use more happiness? And sometimes 10% is just right. Switch your commercial HVAC or refrigeration maintenance contract to Gateway Mechanical, and you could save 10% or more. Plus, with the peace of mind knowing that properly maintained equipment can save you as much as 40% on your energy bill. Switch and save. Visit gatewaymechanical.ca/switch.
Calgary Health Foundation Hospital Home Lottery. The early bird prize deadline is just 3 days away. You could win the $800,000 early bird prize package, a Canmore luxury condo, plus a Ford F-150 and $25,000 cash. You'll also be in to win the grand prize show home and over 2,500 other incredible prizes. Only 3 days remain until the early bird prize deadline. Buy now at CalgaryHospitalHomeLottery.com.
When you hear that Ruth's Chris steak sizzle from across the room, you know you're in for a great meal. Because that sizzle means your mouth-watering aged prime steak was broiled to perfection and served on a 500-degree plate, ensuring your steak is hot and juicy to the last delicious bite. You deserve a great steak, so don't go halfway. Do it right. Choose Ruth's Chris for a world-class dining experience. And remember, if it doesn't sizzle, send it back.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance a new 2021 QX50 from just 1.49% for up to 84 months. From Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Moving towards the top of the hour, 4 o'clock for Calgary Flames warm-up and 5 o'clock for the Flames and New Jersey Devils. That will feature on today's edition of Headlines with Steinberg, with Will, and now Logan Gordon has the biggest stories of the day, but we're starting elsewhere in the hockey world on Headlines. Logo.
Yes, of course, gentlemen, starting with the biggest story in hockey and around sports today, the Blackhawks general manager Stan Bowman has stepped aside after the conclusion of a sexual misconduct investigation in the Chicago Blackhawks organization. Those allegations were made by two former players against former assistant coach Brad Aldrich and the club's handling of those allegations. That was announced by CEO Danny Wirtz and, of course, owner and chairman Rocky Wirtz today. Lead investigator Reed Schnarr of Jenner & Block LLP, disclosed the findings of the investigation in a public briefing on Tuesday. The following full report is 107 pages long and was released after the briefing. Here's Danny Wirtz after he announced that Stan Bowman wouldn't be returning, about who would take his place, and about the fate of the executive still with the team from 2010.
None of the other executives who are involved in the Blackhawks' response in 2010 will be with the organization moving forward. Current Vice President of Hockey Strategy and Analytics, Kyle Davidson, will take on the role of Interim General Manager as we begin our search for new hockey operations leadership.
Pat, where do you start with this? Negligence, sweeping it under the rug, denial, lies. All of that was outlined by federal prosecutor Reed Schar today, outlining a process of an investigation that interviewed over 139 people, past, current players, executives, coaches, employees of the Blackhawks, and their AHL affiliate out of Rockford. Investigators collected over 100 gigabytes of electronic records for more than 145 individuals, including emails, documents, roster information, travel documents, etc. Schar also described a meeting that was held on May 23rd, 2010, not long after the first player known as John Doe came forward with allegations of sexual assault against then-video coach Brad Aldrich. The meeting held to discuss the allegations and how to proceed, including executives John McDonough, Jay Blunk, Al McKissick, general manager Stan Bowen, then head coach Joel Quenneville, and assistant GM Kevin Cheveldayoff, who optioned to push the issue till after the Blackhawks finished their current playoff run. Of course, they won the Stanley Cup in 2010. The NHL has spoke on this. They have fined the Blackhawks $2 million for their lack of response to the incident and lack of ability to recognize the issues within their organization. And as well, Gary Bettman plans to speak individually with Joel Quenneville, who is now the head coach of the Florida Panthers, and Cheveldayoff, who is the GM in Winnipeg, along with the fact that if any of those executives let go by the Blackhawks today wish to return to the NHL in another capacity, they will first have to meet with Bettman and be cleared. This is a huge story that is just unraveling piece by piece through this 107-page report.
Yeah, if you really want the true details, and let's be honest, Will, like the disturbing details, read the report. It is damning, and it looks awful on everybody. You've got Stan Bowman passing the buck on his way out. You've got the entire Blackhawks organization at the time, the entire brain trust, including Joel Quenneville, including Kevin Cheveldayoff, actively, not even just passively, but actively sweeping this thing under the rug because they did not want it to interfere with their playoff run. We're not talking about something minor. We were talking about serious sexual assault allegations that not only were not taken seriously, they were completely written off, hidden, and then the Blackhawks organization took pains to keep them hidden for 10 years. They let down the NHL, they let down the victims. And this is an absolute stain on the organization, their dynasty over the last decade. It looks brutal on the sport of hockey. It looks brutal on the NHL. Some of the players, some of the, not just players, some of the names overall that have been implicated even from outside the Blackhawks organization by reading that report. It's awful. This is a bad day for hockey, Will. And I'm glad the Blackhawks have taken the actions they've taken. I'm glad the NHL has handed out a stiff penalty at $2 million, but my friend, it really feels like the fallout and the impact from this report is just starting.
And yet there's a lot of people critical on the penalty, Pat. I mean, the NHL, $2 million from an NHL team is nothing. I believe the New Jersey Devils were fined $3 million and lost a couple of draft picks, including a first round, for signing Ilya Kovalchuk illegally, or the way that the NHL didn't like. This $2 million fine is less than the Luongo cap recapture. $2 million to me is a joke. I'll just put it that way. The fact they didn't lose any draft picks is also a joke. But yeah, I think bigger picture, this is a terrible look on the organization. And it speaks to where hockey culture still is and where it needs to get to. I think there's been significant steps that have been taken since 2010 when this incident happened. But I still think there's a long way to go. And now all eyes are on Joel Quenneville, on Kevin Cheveldayoff, and their respective futures in Florida and in Winnipeg. And Gary Bettman will speak with both of those individuals alone here in the very near future. And then we'll see if there's fallout from those two situations after the meeting with Commissioner Gary Bettman. Florida Panthers sent out a statement today saying they will wait until Gary Bettman meets with Joel Quenneville before they comment further on the situation, but obviously they have read the 107-page report. And the other big part of that, too, is that I think there was a lot of people wondering if the reporting that was being done in Chicago was going to be made public. And it is, and I think a lot of people are happy with that. And as you say, if you want to go seek it out, you can go read every single word of it. Warning, there is some disturbing details inside of that report, but the 107-page report is available, and you can read it all in its entirety. And I think a lot of people are happy that that was made public, because that was the big question going in, was whether or not the findings we've made public, and now we know that answer.
If you're the NHL, I don't know how you can go forward and still have Kevin Cheveldayoff and Joel Quenneville in those high-profile positions, Logo. I don't know how you can. They are complicit in this whole thing. They were specifically named as being in a meeting where this was brought to light, and they were specifically named as part of the group that actively swept sexual assault allegations under the rug. If you're Gary Bettman, I don't know how you let these guys continue in their positions going forward. The last thing I'll say, I just can't fathom, from a morality standpoint, but more importantly, just from a straight-up logical standpoint, how you could continue to make mistake after mistake and bad decision after bad decision and not expect it to come to roost down the road. This is not something that you sweep under the rug at the best of times. And if anybody involved is surprised this has come out, they just were not using their head. And then there's the whole morality side of it. They let multiple victims down. They make hockey culture look worse, and they have done nothing to further the NHL's agenda of hockey is for everyone. It's just a bad look on the NHL, and it's unfortunate because it's one organization and a group of individuals who made just horrible
decisions. We got breaking
news
from the NHL. Yeah. Stan Bowman has stepped down as Team USA's Olympic general manager.
And that was one of the questions, Will, that we were wondering is, what next? That can't be super surprising.
No, we were waiting. We had kind of said it when the show kicked off at 2 o'clock. We hadn't heard about team or USA Hockey's response. This really isn't one, but Stan Bowman has stepped down, and I think that that was the next logical move. It would have been very stunning if he was in Beijing with Team USA. So that, not surprising, but now made official, Stan Bowman has stepped down as the GM of the men's Olympic hockey team for Team USA in 2022.
Let's move on, gentlemen, to a Calgary Flames game day. They continue this road trip out east and look to remain perfect after a 5-1 win against the New York Rangers last night. They play the 3-1-0 New Jersey Devils tonight in Blake Coleman's return to the team that drafted him in the third round in 2011. The Devils have been off for a while here. They last played on Saturday, picking up a win against the Buffalo Sabres. Since then, they've been waiting for the Flames' arrival. No morning skate for the Flames with a game last night, so unsure of any expected lineup changes. Will we see Jacob Markstrom again? Will they turn back to Dan Vladar? What about any of the extras? Brad Richardson, Nikita Zadorov, all of that still up in the air. So make sure that you're listening to Flames Warm Up with Pat Seinberg and Peter Labardius a little bit later on today. We'll bring you that news as soon as we have it. But it was an impressive performance last night, Will, from one line in particular that included Blake Coleman. His line with Michael Backlund and Tyler Pitlick was able to provide some offense for the Flames behind that first line. Michael Backlund spoke to the media today and has liked what the group has, what that line has brought to the group.
Getting better and better. I thought yesterday was our best game so far. I mean, both those guys missed pretty much whole camp, like playing games, and for me, it's two new faces, new guys to learn what they're doing, what their habits are, and all that kind of stuff, what their movement patterns are on the ice. So it's a process, but I thought we took a big step yesterday.
Feels weird to imagine that it's been this long for Coleman since being traded, Will, that he finally makes his return to New Jersey tonight, but he does so with his new team, the Calgary Flames, playing some pretty good hockey as they look to move to 4-0 on this road trip.
Yeah, they played really good, and two games left on this trip, and I still think it's been a massive success regardless of how these two games go. I think Backlund's comments were, you know, supportive about what we've said so far in this show, Pat, and that line played really, really well. I think Pitlick and Coleman, as you just heard Backlund talk about, both players missing significant chunks of camp, and yet here they are, you know, playing really well now and getting their feet under them and getting used to, you know, playing what, you know, the style Darryl Sutter wants. And I think Pitlick is finally getting back up to speed after he missed all that time with that injury. And Blake Coleman, I think he had his best game as a Calgary Flame last night. And I would expect that he's ready to go tonight in his return to New Jersey in almost 2 years. It's been since he's played in New Jersey last. So it's going to be a big night for that line again. And as for the lineup, I think we do expect Dan Vladar to play tonight in the second half of the back-to-back. As we said earlier, in fact, I'd be surprised if Jacob Markstrom gets the start this evening. Vladar did nothing to, give you lack of confidence in what he can do after playing on Saturday against the Washington Capitals. And outside of that, I don't expect Zadorov to get in. Maybe Michael Stone in for Gudbranson, although Gudbranson's been really good on this trip. So a winning lineup, coaches usually don't like to change that, Pat. And even with a back-to-back, I don't know if we expect dramatic changes to this lineup outside of the goaltender. So as Logan says, we'll find out just after 4:30 this afternoon when the team hits the ice for warm-up. But right now, this Calgary Flames team is playing really, really well, so I don't expect much in terms of changes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sometimes on back-to-backs, a coach will make a change just for fatigue or those types of wear and tear reasons. So maybe we see a slight tweak. Maybe that is what allows a Richardson to get in or a Stone to get in or something like that. Could see that, but you know, by and large, there's no reason to be making big changes. The one that I do think is at the very least a decent chance, Logo, is to see Vladar on the second half of a back-to-back, and he didn't do anything on Saturday afternoon to hurt those chances, I don't think.
Coming up with Flames warm-up in about 15 minutes time with Pat and Lou here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. They'll take you up to puck drop at 5 o'clock from New Jersey, the Flames and the New Jersey Devils. The World Series Game 1 kicks off tonight. Gentlemen, the Atlanta Braves and the Houston Astros. Charlie Morton on the mound for Houston. Framber Valdez going for the Atlanta Braves. And believe it or not, these former NL rivals haven't seen each other for a while, Pat. They used to play each other all the time. It was a constant back and forth, but thanks to a pandemic and some weird scheduling, this will actually be the first time that the Braves and the Astros have seen each other since 2017. And they'll do so in a World Series game tonight. For the Astros, Jose Altuve, a big part of the Astros title back in 2017, is back for more tonight, and he says the group really only has one thing on their mind.
Everybody just talks about winning. You know, we all want to win. There's not a single guy that's thinking about something else but winning, and I think that can be the key to win a World Series.
On the other side, Freddie Freeman and the Braves, it's been a while since they've been to a World Series. He knows that there's some expectations and some excitement around that, but knows they've got four wins to get before they do any celebrating.
Everyone's excited we got here. You know, it's been a long time for the Braves organization to get here, but we know we got four more wins to go, and it's pretty easy to balance that when you know what's at the end of the tunnel.
What are we thinking? Game one coming up in about 6:08 tonight, Pat, from Minute Maid Park in Houston, Texans. The Astros coming in as the 3-2 favorites.
Yeah, this is a very good Astros team, Will, that I think that we have very much come to realize was not just a product of banging trash cans and stealing signs and all that type of stuff. They're a very good team. But boy, Atlanta is the feel-good favorite in this one. It's just it's been a plucky run for this Braves team, and I'd like to see them. Look, they slayed the dragon in the LA Dodgers and took them out in very impressive and dramatic fashion, especially in Game 1 and 2. The heart is leaning towards the Braves in this World Series, my friend.
Yeah, I'm with the Braves myself. I think they're going to win the series, but it's not going to be easy. The Houston Astros are the best team by far when it comes to batting with two outs. We saw the damage they did in the ALCS. They batted .468 so far in the playoffs with runners in scoring position and two outs. They are deadly. They are what you call a legit tough out. But I do like the Braves in this series. I think the Astros starting pitching is their weak point. I think the Braves can take advantage of it. I think it's going to be a very good, very long series. I don't think this is over in four or five games, but I'm leading Braves in this World Series.
6:08 first pitch. You can catch that one tonight on Sportsnet 1, gentlemen. Your Tuesday edition of headlines.
Big Show headlines brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, offering winter tire swaps from just $59.95. Book your appointment now at Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
It's Pat Steinberg, Logan Gordon, Will Nault, along with you live in the Iconic Studio this afternoon, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Electrical construction, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Warm up at the top of the hour, back to wrap the big show and the sports drive at 5 Eastern on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Will, one of the things that we have not talked a ton about today when it comes to the Flames and the New Jersey Devils, or even this three-game road trip for Calgary where they're 3-for-3, is the goaltending. I do know that we talked about, you know, who we think is going to start in this game, and you and I are on the same page. We'd be surprised if it isn't Dan Vladar. We won't know that for about 35 minutes when the Flames hit the ice for warm-up along with the Devils at Prudential Center. But, you know, one area that has been really strong so far on this trip has been goaltending. Two games for Jacob Markstrom, he's allowed one goal, and then Dan Vladar in his first start as a member of the Flames on Saturday afternoon in Washington. Goaltending has been one of the strengths of this team so far on this trip.
Yeah, and I think part of that too, and to take nothing away from the goaltenders, but we've talked a lot about this. I think the style of play under Daryl Sutter certainly leads you to have better results if you're a goaltender. And Jacob Markstrom, I tweeted this out last night during the game. I think last night looked like the $6 million man, and at many points this season, outside of maybe that Edmonton Oilers game where he probably should have made that save on the Puljujarvi's goal, you know, 26 or 28 seconds after Lindholm brought you within one. That's when you need your $6 million man to step up. But all things considered, and you look at his season in a nutshell, he's looked like a $6 million man, and the goaltending as a whole, to your point, has been a strength for this Flames team. And so that's why I think there's probably some confidence to go back to Vladar tonight on the second half of a back-to-back. And the style this team plays, it leads to easier workloads on the goaltenders this season, and that's going to be important in the condensed schedule we're seeing in this 2021-22 season.
Well, and I don't think it's any different when it comes to the goaltending position as a lot of others. Like, you've got an opportunity here to get Vladar into a game on the second half of a back-to-back in a condensed schedule between now and the Olympic break with 14 back-to-backs this year. Here's a real opportunity to get Vladar some more work so that you can, if he has another solid outing, you can feel more and more confident as the Flames and as the coaching staff to just keep going back to him when you need to. So this is another, if they do decide to go to Vladar, this is another pretty important step for him and a pretty important game for him if he gets the call.
100%. And I think Daryl Sutter is always a guy who's evaluating, and I think has that old school mentality of really trust. And if he doesn't trust you, he's probably not going to go to you regardless of the situation and regardless of what your paycheck, the name on the back of your sweater says, all that. He's a guy that kind of goes on his gut feel and trust. And I think so far through training camp, he mentioned his numbers a couple of times in the last couple of weeks on this show. His numbers in training camp were very good. I know the team, when they acquired him, felt like his ceiling was very high. And there was a lot of potential for Vladar. And again, I think you look at Saturday, he really didn't give you any reason to go away from him. So another big opportunity for him if he gets the call. And I would expect him to be ready because he knows what's expected of him. And when you're sitting behind a guy like Markstrom, you're probably not going to get tapped on the back to go in very often. But when you do, you've got to have success. And again, the old cliche in the NHL, Pat, is you need wins and points from your backup goaltender to make the playoffs, and that's no different for this team.
There you go. We'll see who finds who the Flames decide to go with in net. We'll find out who goes in net in just over a half hour time. That is your look inside hockey.
Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. With new product families, member rewards, and sales events, you'll find more quality, more savings in every department, every day at Calgary Co-op.
Back with a full show tomorrow for Riley, for Logo, for Will. I'm Pat. That'll do it for the big show on the Sports Drive at 5 Eastern. Flames warm-up, Calgary, New Jersey. Your one-hour pregame show is in 2 minutes' time on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.